You are listening to David Kaplan. Weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
We don't get fooled again. Hey, this hour brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through life's ups and downs, for all the journeys ahead, you know what to bring. The card you can count on. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through it all. Take that, Danny. Take that, Chris. 312-332-3776.
You know what's great about sitting like literally half a foot away from you? Huh. Is that I can make sure you do these reads immediately. That you can't put them in your pile of stuff, and then you do, you know, you're tweeting. And another thing, before we get to Rob, that I've noticed sitting half a foot away from you.
Yeah.
You are nonstop. So, like, you're interviewing Hawk Harrelson. You're sending out texts. You're sending out tweets. And you're reading papers. Like, I don't know how it's possible to do so many things at once.
I don't have any papers.
Yesterday, you're talking to Jesse Rogers, and you're reading a Bulls story. Like, you're just the attention span that you don't have is incredible.
No, it's if you were 12 years old,
you would be on Adderall. Now let's talk Packers with our buddy Rob.
All right, welcome to Rob Domofsky, who, as I said earlier, there is nobody better covering a National Football League team. This guy's been on that beat forever, and he is a dear friend, and he is awesome, and he joins us now. Rob, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Cap, Danny, I got to tell you, I hear you're at the winter meetings in San Diego, and I'm having trouble with that because I'm looking outside Lambeau Field right now, and the parking lot's a sheet of ice. The sky is gray. There's more snow coming. So I've got a real problem with you guys right now.
Yeah, and the funny thing is we were sitting outside, Rob, two nights ago, and I'm doing a TV show out on the pool deck, and it's like 50, 48. It's late.
I saw the picture. I saw you posted a picture. I think it was you and maybe Jim Hendry, and you're all bundled up. I'm like, give me a break.
And I'm like, boy, it's cold here. And somebody turned and said, the wind chill's 2 at home. Shut your mouth.
It's Packers right, Bears weather, though, isn't it?
100%. So let's talk about this matchup. We played some audio of Mitchell Trubisky saying, I didn't even know what Tremont Williams said after game one, where Tremont came out and said, yeah, we made him play quarterback, and we knew that's what we had to do. And Mitch is playing much, much better, and he's taken ownership of the offense. What do you think happens with just the Trubisky aspect on Sunday from a Packer defensive perspective?
Well, I think they'll take the same approach. And I talked to Tremont about that afterwards, and he said, look, you know, I didn't mean any disrespect toward Mitch. We didn't want him to run, was what he was saying. But look, I don't care who you are. When you tell a quarterback that we want to make you beat us, that guy's going to take it personally, and I would too. It's not unlike what happened last week with the Packers playing Washington. Bostic, their guy in Washington, said we want to make Rodgers beat us with his arm, and what he meant was they can't let Aaron Jones go crazy. And I think there's a little bit of that, with Trubisky. You know, he's, as you guys know, he's athletic. I thought that the first time I saw him, he was way more athletic than I thought he was. And I just think they want to try to make him play cerebral football because maybe that's not his strong suit. I'm not saying this is Charles Woodson saying, you know, Jay Cutler's going to be Jay and throw it to us. But, look, Trubisky's played really well the last 3-4 weeks. But if I were them, I'd try to make him beat me too.
So I look at what the Bears have been able to do, and in game one they were awful. And the Packer defense was fresh and it was good. Yep. But Trubisky now has said, no. I want to be on the move. He started using his legs.
Yep.
And they just look differently. Do you believe where the Packer defense is at this point in the season, they can handle Mitchell if he does indeed decide to be as mobile as he was in the Dallas game?
I don't think that will be the huge problem, Cap. What I think has been a problem and could continue to be a problem for the Packers defense is the explosive plays. They are leading the league, and this is a bad thing, but leading the league in giving up plays of 40 yards or more. I think they've given up 16 this season. They've just been absolutely destroyed by the big play, and it's been coverage breakdowns, it's been missed tackles, it's been quarterbacks that have made – you know, moves out of the pocket and then hit plays down the field. And it's crazy because after that game in Chicago, Aaron Rodgers, the first thing he said on the field in his post-game interview was, hey, we've got a defense now. Well, you look at it right now, that defense is actually ranked worse than it was last year when, you know, they really struggled. They've got some great pieces, and like you said, they dominated that game in Chicago in week one. But it seems like right now the pieces are greater than the sum, and usually you try to be greater than your parts, and it just hasn't worked that way.
So repeat that stat again. Where is the Packer defense ranked?
They're ranked 22nd in yards, and last year they finished 18th. So they've actually gotten worse in total yards. And I think a lot of that is because of the explosive plays that I mentioned, allowing 16 plays of 40 yards or more, which is most in the league. But they are good, Cap, in a couple of key areas. A red zone defense, they're in the top five. And takeaways, they're in the top five. So it's the classic bend but don't break.
Exactly. So as you watched that game last week, and I was watching the Packers and the Redskins, mm-hmm. and I'm in a football contest where you got to pick five games against the spread, yep. I laid the 13 points and went, yeah, I think I'm good. 14 nothing, they're rolling, and I'm like, yep. Yeah, that was a good pick. And the next thing I know, they barely hang on to win. Yeah. Aaron looks awful. So yep. Where are they from that day to coming into Sunday?
Well, they're still searching for an offensive identity, and we asked Aaron about that yesterday, and he said, look, at this point with three games left in the season, it's probably too late to find an identity. And I guess if you'd have to say their identity is they just have to find different ways to win because they don't have a lot of go-to guys other than Davante Adams and Aaron Jones. And the one thing that they haven't done, Cap, and I'm sure the Bears will look at this, is they haven't had a game where both Aaron Jones and Davante Adams have gone off. There's been games where Adams has. He's had 10 catches for 180 yards against Philly. There's been games where Aaron Jones has. He was unstoppable at Kansas City. But they've never done it together. So as a defense, what do? You pick your poison. You say, we're going to stop one of these two guys and take our chances. And that's actually been a pretty good formula, not necessarily for beating the Packers, but for holding this offense in check. And that's what they're, you know, that's really where Rodgers and company are struggling at this point, is they just haven't found a second guy on those occasions to come through. And I think that's why you had games like they had last week against the Redskins, where it was a one possession game in the fourth quarter. Same thing the week before at the Giants. Yeah, they ended up winning that game 31-13, but that game was 17-13 with 12 minutes to go.
Yeah, it was right there, and I'm looking at it. And then when the Packers kicked that field goal, I'm like, come on, man, let's go. And it ended up, you know, obviously a close ball game, 20-15. So what concerns you that the Bears do well that you would think Matt LaFleur is in his office going, we've got to make sure we handle that?
Yeah, their defense, and this is LaFleur's words from yesterday, their defense can wreck a game. And that's no secret to fans in Chicago. I mean, they have so much talent, even without Roquan Smith. And Rodgers always mentions Roquan. Like, when he's going through the Bears' defense, he has the last 2 years, Roquan's name is always the one that comes up first or second after, you know, Mac. And it's, you know, that's obviously a blow. But this, you know, the defense dominated, really. I mean, the opener in Chicago, the Bears' defense completely manhandled the Packers' offensive line. And the Packers' offensive line has been a little bit up and down this year. So, and you know, they're like every offensive line at this point in the season, 13 games in, they're banged up. So that's the area where Matt LaFleur is concerned, and Matt LaFleur has got to devise a game plan to get the ball out of Rodgers' hands quickly, which is the opposite of what happened last week. Rodgers held the ball forever against Washington, and probably because he couldn't find anybody open. So they're going to have to scheme. This is a big scheme game, in my opinion, where you're going to have to scheme things to get guys open and get them open quickly against this defense. It's not a game where you can just say, we're going to throw our playmakers out there and let them go. This is a big scheme game.
Talking to Rob Domofsky from ESPN, who covers the Green Bay Packers and has for a long, long time. Running the football is something the Packers have done better this year. Akeem Hicks is going to probably be ready to roll on Sunday. Not sure how many snaps he'll have, but his impact on the game frees things up for Khalil Mack, potentially Leonard Floyd. Nick Kwiatkowski may not be Roquan Smith, but he's having an outstanding year in a variety of roles. Can the Packers run the ball effectively?
Well, you know, they're going to have to, at least to establish something at the start. I think that's the great question because, you know, Rodgers mentioned Kwiatkowski yesterday. He actually just said 44 because he didn't want to butcher his last name. But he said, look, number 44 is not, you know, he's not that big of a drop-off. So, you know, that's certainly where the Packers' focus is on that middle of defense. Floyd had a great game in week one, if I remember right. So there's going to be, you know, there's going to be matchups that they've got to take care of, and they're going to have to double-team somebody, and that's the challenge with the Bears' defense is who do you double-team?
Yeah, look, if you try and double-team Khalil Mack, now that you've got Akeem Hicks in the middle, and it sounds like Prince Amukamara is going to try and go, which gives you, you know, another really solid cover-type guy back there. I mean, I think this is a super competitive game. I really do.
And just because it's, you know, because it's these two teams, and it probably won't be like what we saw with Saints and 49ers where it's 48-46, doesn't mean it's not going to be a great game. I mean, it can be a 17-14 game between these two teams could be a really, really good game if you like that kind of football. And, you know, maybe people thought the opener was a dud, 10-3. I tend to think it was just a typical Bears-Packers game that if you love football, that's the kind of game you're going to enjoy watching.
Packers are 10-3. And I said this to you early in the year. I still stand by it, having watched every one of their games. Yeah, they're a good team. They've got a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's amazing. But that is not a team I look at and go, oh, my God, that 10-win team is amazing. They're okay. They're a nice team. They're well-coached.
Right. That was proven when they went to San Francisco 3 weeks ago when we all thought, okay, you know, they were a two-loss team at the time. 49ers were, what, a one-loss team? And we thought, you know, this is going to be, hey, this is maybe the top two teams in the NFC. And before you knew it, it was 37-8 San Francisco. So, you know, and it was interesting. Right after the game against Washington on Sunday, there was still about 5 minutes left in that shootout game between the Saints and 49ers. And LaFleur actually watched the end of it before he came into his post-game press conference. And while he would only admit that he watched the end of the game, if he were being honest, he'd probably admit, boy, you know, our offense isn't capable of what those two offenses are.
Yeah, that was – I watched it and went, man, oh, man, is that amazing.
Yeah.
Fun to watch,
that was,
isn't it?
The last team with the ball was going to win that game.
So what is your prediction on what happens on Sunday? Because really felt that the Bears would have a better year than they've had, but now they're starting to play a little bit better.
Well, I watched a lot of the Thanksgiving game, was that the Dallas game? I watched the Dallas game, which was
last week. Thanksgiving was at the Lions.
Yes,
and Mitch was really
good
in both.
Right, I watched both of those games and thought, boy, this is a much different Bears team than I had seen. And if this game were at Soldier Field, I would probably be leaning toward picking the Bears. I have to file my prediction for ESPN.com in about 2 hours, and I haven't done it yet. And usually I do it pretty quickly. This one is giving me a little bit more pause. I still think that the Packers somehow find a way to win, but I'm thinking 17-14, something like that.
Boy, it'd be unbelievable theater if the Bears are able to go into Lambeau and find a way to win. I need the Packers as a Bears fan to take out Minnesota, and the Bears are going to have to beat the Packers home against the Chiefs and then win again up at Minnesota. But, you know, stranger things have happened, but it's got to start on Sunday. So I think it's going to be wildly entertaining. What's the weather forecast for Sunday up there?
I believe the last I looked, it's about 15 degrees, but no snow. We're supposed to get another round of snow this afternoon. The Packers actually put out a call for people to come shovel out Lambeau Field this afternoon. It's crazy. I think they pay people like $10 an hour to come do it. and they're lined up, you know, down Oneida Street. But it looks like no snow, but cold, about 15 degrees on Sunday.
All right. Well, Jim Thome is here at the winter meetings, and he was on our set yesterday, and he said, my wife and daughter have somewhere they have to go. So I said to my son, hey, I'm flying home on Thursday. Sunday morning, you want to get up and go to Lambeau Field? So he got two tickets. He goes,
nice.
We're going to both be in Bears gear, and we're coming to the game as fans. He's never been to Lambeau.
Wow. Well, that's it'll be a treat for him, a guy who's been in a lot of great cathedrals of sports over the years, I'm sure.
You know, I've never been to Lambeau. I've been outside it. I've done, as you know,
you've done basketball.
Games.
Yeah, you've done basketball games right across
the street. At Resch Arena, right across the street. Isn't it called Resch Arena?
Resch Center, yep, the Resch Center.
Resch Center, yeah. So I've been there, but I've never been in Lambeau Field, so that is on my bucket list.
Well, make sure you guys go to Kroll's across the street, Ridge Road, for a true Wisconsin butter burger. Before you head into the stadium, it's a great tailgate over there.
Hey, man, thanks for always being so generous with your time, and look forward to seeing you when you get back to town.
All right, sounds good, Cap.
See you, bud. One of my favorites, he's Rob Domofsky from ESPN. I've known that guy forever, and he has been all over the Packer beat. Just a really, really good dude. 312-332-3776. By the way, if you're scoring at home, Fred Huebner is on with Waddle today. He will be co-hosting the afternoon show. And then tonight on Under the Hood, 7 to 10, Nick Friedel talks NBA. It's Throwback Thursday. And, of course, you get the fun with Jay Hood. So there you go. And coming up, Carmen and Yurko, right after this show. 312-332-3776. Do you have a pick locked in yet, Danny, on the game Sunday?
Boy. My heart is screaming Bears. I'm just screaming Bears. Plus, they need this victory so badly to keep the playoff chase going. I just don't see them going up to Lambeau Field and beating the Packers. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think our boss, Craig Karmazon, sent an email earlier this week and said that whoever predicts this score closest wins a 100 jelly beans. And I think my prediction was Packers 24, Bears 17.
I'll give you my pick when we come back after break. Jesse Rogers is going to join us on set. I'll give you my pick on the Bears and the Packers, and I could tell you it differs greatly.
Of course you have the Bears winning. Of course.
Let me guess, Cap. Bears 50, Packers minus 75. Is that what you're going with?
You're actually closer than Danny.
Listen, if Chris Black went back, and he brought the audio from every Friday or Wednesday or what before a Bears game, right? you've picked the Bears to win every game.
No, I have not.
Yes, you have. You have not picked the Bears to lose a single game this year.
I absolutely
That's
have.
Factually speaking.
That hater. Is factually incorrect.
You hater.
Every week you have Mitch throwing three touchdowns, a
Four.
Perfect game, and the Bears winning.
I actually have Mitch
Sometimes
throwing a
you
lot
have to
more than three touchdowns.
Pick with your head, not with your heart, Catman.
No, I pick with my head.
Now you're texting. You're not even listening.
I'm not. I'm looking for the picks that Craig sent out because I'm going to send
But
mine
you
in.
Could do that at the commercial break. Yeah, we're on the radio. People are listening to us. And instead of focusing on what you're talking
right,
about,
you
you're
know
going
what?
Through your phone.
I'll do what I got to do. You take care of you. You're, I'll take care of me.
This is
Jesse
so
Rogers,
eye-opening to sit next
Jesse
to
Jesse Rogers is here.
Don't you have a read for
set with us.
Yeah, it's
actually,
right here in front of
okay,
me.
Actually, all right, let's keep things on track here.
You guys do you, I'll do me, okay? Take care of yourselves.
But hey, our job is to help you do you.
Take the guess. No, I'm never going to let you two do that. Take the guesswork out of gifting gadgets with help from Apt Electronics, your holiday headquarters. Find everything from this year's must-have accessory, Apple AirPods, with the wireless charging case, to the building blocks of a killer home theater system. Speakers, subwoofers, soundbars from Klipsch. Not sure what to get? Apps experts like the great Steve Shapiro are happy to guide you. Call us 847-544-2222 or visit us at app.com for free shipping and free same-day delivery on thousands of items. Apt, A-B-T. Pleasing people since 1936. We'll take a fast time out. Jesse Rogers joins us here next.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the scenes of the winter meetings with Cap and Company, brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. You're listening to Cap and Company live from San Diego, brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. We are behind the scenes with the baseball winter meetings on ESPN 1000.
All right, welcome back. ESPN 1000. I'm David Kaplan, behind the scenes of the baseball winter meetings, brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. With Danny Zetterman, Christopher Black, I'm David Kaplan, and Jesse Rogers is here with us, brought to you by Dan Fields and the Fields Auto Group. Get a unique, one-of-a-kind car buying experience by visiting one of their many Chicagoland dealerships or visit them at fieldsauto.com. All right, Jesse, I spent on camera 22 minutes with Scott Boras yesterday and a good 20 minutes before and after the interview talking about other stuff. He said on air that while Theo may end up winning the grievance, he said he shouldn't be so quick to dismiss that, yeah, we feel pretty comfortable we're going to win. You don't know what an arbitrator is going to do. He said, and on the record, he said, I'm just telling you what was done to this kid is wrong. He said the rule, if you read it, written out, it says you get 6 years till free agency, not 7 years because you micromanaged him when his fielding numbers, and they brought this up, he said, in the hearing, he said, they said, well, we sent him back down for better defense, and they read the quotes. And he said, yeah, you fielded like 11 balls in the minor leagues before you brought him up. He said, and the guy you had chosen to be a starter, Mike Ault, had worse fielding metrics in the minor leagues at the same exact level that Chris was at. So he said, please, who are we kidding here? He goes, and you don't know what an arbitrator is going to do.
Yeah, I think I said yesterday I thought it was so interesting that Theo came out publicly so strong about the fact that they thought they were going to win, paraphrasing here. But obviously I think he wanted to remind other teams that he's dealing with that they think they're going to win. He's going to have 2 years left before free agency. However, the union feels this has been their best candidate of any to prove their point about service time manipulation. This guy had an unprecedented 4 years, College Player of the Year, Minor League Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, MVP. Nobody in the history of the game has had 4 years like that. Now, of course, a couple of those years came after he was promoted to the majors, but going into that first season, he had led spring training in 9 homers, all that stuff. I don't disagree with you, except Theo is just simply falling back on the notion they're not going to upend the system a year and a half or whatever way from a year and a half out from the new CBA. So they're not going to upend it now, but the union's trying to make the point like, okay, this has got to change during the next CBA. He could be wrong, Theo. He could be wrong. But I believe the whole league thinks they're going to win now and may have to pay for it later in negotiations.
Yeah, I asked Scott, I said, why would an arbitrator, knowing the winter meetings are coming,
right,
not get this done because you're hamstringing the Cubs and the industry? Am I trading for 1 year of that guy or 2 years of that guy? Like, it's a huge thing. And he said, the arbitrator could care less about the winter meetings.
Sure.
The arbitrator is simply part of a legal process. He said he doesn't care. He's not going to go, well, I better get this deal done now. He goes, it may take him 2 more weeks, might take him a month. It may happen today. Nobody knows.
I know. If timing mattered, it would have been done August 1st, all the stuff, and then you get a ruling November 1st. And I say August 1st is because it's past the trade deadline. Like, let the Cubs do their business, let the teams do their business, and then they go to work. Now, I was told that'd be a bad idea because Chris would have to, you know, Chris
testified,
and you right. can't do that in season. So I think Scott's right. Arbitrator doesn't care. I think I told you the other day, I got a text a week ago Tuesday, so not that long ago, they were still exchanging briefs. So this thing is really dragged out. I was told early January. Maybe I'll get an update later this month that'll say later in January. So, yeah, it's tied the Cubs' hands a little bit, but not a lot. Theo made that point, not a lot. They have bigger – that's the scary thing. They actually have bigger things to worry about than this arbitrator's decision, trying to remake their roster a little bit with no money. I mean, it really is a sad state of affairs, and I understand what Theo has said. Teams go through their cycles. I get that.
I get it.
The Red Sox are shedding, okay? The Red Sox and Cubs.
Astros might be shedding.
Yeah, there you go. The Cleveland Indians are shedding. All those teams have had success for several years in a row. It doesn't take away the sting for Cub fans right now. Two off seasons in a row, especially this one, seeing all these great players being being added, big money, mostly big markets. But, you know, the Angels haven't always been known as kind of, you know, the big market like the Dodgers. I mean, it's the same area, but they have an owner that wants to spend. So I get that. Here's the problem. What if Theo doesn't get done what he wants to do? And I agree with him that the status quo would not be great. He talked about the status quo yesterday. If you have to bring everyone back, well, at least they got David Ross to maybe change up the dynamic. But, man, that offense has stalled not once but 2 years in a row. But from here, so here's the latest news. Danny said, what do you got? It's not good. I mean, we already know there's a big asking price for Contreras. There's also a big asking price for Bryant.
Yeah, the asking price on Contreras, I was told by a Padre guy yesterday, absurd.
Yeah, yeah, and that makes sense to me because of 3 years of control and he's making no money. An asking price for Bryant, I think the Cubs would be more reasonable, but it doesn't sound like a lot of teams are going to bite big time. Nobody wants to give up young pitching. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Even the Braves, who I wrote about today, would be the good match I've been talking about all week. You know, everybody, I mean, Donaldson's market is going to go through the roof right now. The Dodgers, the Phillies, the Rangers,
the Braves Nationals. And the Nationals. And the Braves,
it's amazing. And I think that's why even a year ago, this is just my speculation, the Cubs were looking into what Bryant might be worth. And, you know, these teams know what markets are going to be, you know, moving from year to year. And I didn't know the third base market would be this volatile this year, but maybe the Cubs did. And so they start poking around last year about Chris Bryant and what he'd be worth. So I still think once Donaldson goes off the board, there's enough contenders that are going to get desperate. The Cubs should get what they want. But hearing different things about Chris Bryant's value, what other teams think of him. I mean, he is coming off two injury-plagued years. Teams have to go back 3 years to really see the real Chris Bryant. And so there's a lot going on. I don't know if the Cubs are going to get done exactly what they want to do. No team does, I guess. But, man, it would stink if they don't change anything. Although I think a lot of Cub fans wouldn't be that upset. But it will really stink if they don't get true value for a guy like Chris Bryant or Wilson Contreras.
Talking to Jesse Rogers here on ESPN 1000. They are at $214 million right now. Mm-hmm. And that's with the subtractions of a bunch of guys. So
is that with the arbitration increases or without?
Yes.
Oh,
with.
It is. Okay. So there
and with the $15 million in player benefits that okay. you have to add in.
Right. So that's yeah. Makes
okay.
sense. Yeah.
So $214 million, they've done nothing to improve their team.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
So something's going to happen, Jesse. There is no way that they're coming back status quo.
No.
None.
No. It's going to happen more in subtracting than adding. It's going to be, if they can, subtract Chris Bryant's salary, $20 million, $18, $20 million right there. And then around the edges, Theo talked about, and I mentioned this to you the other day, I said it on your TV show, left-handed hitting second baseman to complement Nico Hoerner. But that left-handed second baseman, I'm trying to think of a great left-handed second baseman, it's not going to be Daniel Murphy in his prime. It's going to be a $3 to $4 million guy. The pitchers they bring in are right now are going to be million-dollar guys, maybe a couple million, $3 million. It's not going to be anything big. And that's after they shed.
Jesse, I love Theo. You know I do.
Yeah.
I think he's great. However, when I really sat down and looked at it on my computer this morning, it's unconscionable the amount of money they have spent on draft picks, international signings, and have zero to show for it on young impact players right now. Nothing.
Hence, Jason McLeod basically getting moved out of that development area. Hence, all this changeover behind the scenes, trying to modernize, hiring new young people with new ideas, all this stuff. You're exactly right, Cap. And they're paying the price on the field. They're paying the price off the field. I truly believe Tom Ricketts has been more involved than ever. And when I say involved, I'm not saying he's on the phone every day, but involved enough to say, you're not adding until you shed. You're not getting past this number, whatever that number is. Certainly the number is less than the CBT thing. I'm with you. And he knows it. Theo knows it. He will do the mea culpas when it comes up. They've not done very well, especially in the player development area for some of these guys.
How can
signed.
This be that this team that, you know, has these great executives, and they are. They're brilliant guys. Everyone in the game says they're among the smartest guys in the room. How can it possibly be that you go through the 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 draft? I won't count the 19. Those guys were just picked. And you have
Albert Almora, not very good. Ian Happ, eh, he's okay.
Yep.
Schwarber, there's a lot of guys like that. Okay, he's a nice player.
No, he's a good player.
Nice player. Not a superstar. Nice player. And Chris Bryant. Yep. What else am I missing here? Hendry brings you Wilson Contreras. Hendry brings you Javi Baez. So what indeed have they really drafted, signed, or developed? They made a good trade for Hendricks. They made a good trade for Rizzo.
Yeah, their trades have been pretty fantastic.
Yeah, except for Quintana.
Yeah, their development, pretty fantastic. I mean, Arrieta alone puts them in the Hall of Fame of trades.
Why would they not trade Jose Quintana, or is there no value for
him? No, I wouldn't dismiss that. I think those deals would come in July, the pitcher deals, when a real kind of sell-off would happen. If they trade Quintana or even Darvish now,
Darvish they'll never
do. It would feel like, even Quintana would feel like you're starting to rebuild a little bit. Pitching is so important. You could.
Jesse, you could move $11.5 million.
I understand that. You're not adding it back, and then you're really short on the mound. You can't be short on the mound. Look, they could. I'm not denying they could.
Rick Porcello just got 9.
Right.
I'd rather have him than Quintana.
Yeah, maybe. I just think the pitching trades are going to come in July when teams get a little desperate for pitching. I could be wrong. I think Theo talked about, basically plan A, plan B, plan C. I wonder if one of those plans includes, okay, we can't move Bryant, let's try Quintana, let's move some money. Because if Ricketts' orders are move money no matter what, they don't want to give away Bryant. They don't want to give away Contreras. Okay, well, Quintana isn't the worst loss. You know, talent-wise, we'll get back an A prospect. We'll get rid of that money. You may not be wrong. You may not be wrong. Kimbrel's contract, I think if I'm Ricketts, I'm like, and I do think he will not be on this team within 12 months. So that seems like a short-term contract with every intention to trade him, flip him sooner
rather than later. Who's taking that guy unless he comes back and pitches well?
Well, that would be the thing where Ricketts says, okay, you spent this money and he's no good. You sent our new manager down there to scout him. But let's give him that full spring training and see. I have my doubts. I had my doubts before they signed him. I also didn't think they would, and then they did. So there's a lot of weird things, you know. Yeah, I just feel like they got to survive this stretch here and make the best of it, and that means dealing what they can.
Jesse, everyone's answer is throw more money at the problem. How come we can't sign Rendon? Why don't we do? They've thrown nothing but money at this team. Hayward, Chatwood, Morrow, Kimbrel, Descalso, and I could keep adding up all the smaller deals. Do you realize how much money they've spent and they got
and the talent?
Not much to show for it.
Production on the field. You're right. You're right. And I think that's where Tom has sort of stepped in, whether that's more metaphorically or literally. No, I can't. And remember, Theo's contract's up, and he more than likely is going to move on. All the tea leaves kind of say that. So what's this organization going to look like in a couple years? The one thing during the week, I guess, was my negative story about Rizzo. They talked about that. I mean, there's just no positive.
Okay, that
I thought they'd sign Baez at some point here to give some like, I'd sign Baez and Rizzo and at least have something, put a smile on some people's
faces.
Hold
on a minute. Go ahead, Danny.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask, because of all the negative stuff, it got me thinking. So it's obvious that they want to trade Wilson Contreras. He knows about it. He took to social media. He clearly was upset about that.
Yeah.
Chris Bryant has a grievance against the team. It's clear they want to move him. If they bring him back and Wilson Contreras back, those are two guys that knew the team wanted to move them, but they're stuck there with the organization. And then you have what you brought up, Anthony Rizzo not happy about getting a new contract. Could there be a real negative aspect with this team as we go into spring training? You've got three of your biggest stars on the team all disgruntled with the franchise.
I'd like to think they're all professional, but you're not wrong. I think Chris, of the three, would be the most okay. I think Willie could be a little bit emotional about it. He doesn't have Joe Maddon there anymore, and then what you said. And I don't know where Riz is. I haven't talked to him.
Okay, let me ask you
something. I don't know. It's not a bad point, though. It's not a bad point.
Okay.
It would be a team in flux a little bit, and Ross would need to bring them together.
Okay, I completely disagreed with you yesterday when you wrote the article about Rizzo.
Remember, I didn't put a big opinion in there.
No, we were debating, though, on the air.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Okay, if I'm Theo Epstein, and I love Rizzo, my relationship with him, I'm glad he's on this show. He's a great guy and a hell of a baseball player. If I'm Theo and Jed, I'm not extending him now.
I get that.
Why would I?
Okay.
I've got 2 more years of control. Show me that you're going to stay healthy, that your back is not going to lock up on you as it has multiple seasons. Show me you're going to be a leader in that room with a new manager, and let's take this thing to the next level, and I'll pay you.
Why do I have to extend you now?
Okay, well, then again, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Why do you have to extend Javi Baez now? Why do you have to extend anybody with 2 years out? Because if you don't, you have a chance at them walking. You have no replacement at first base. You have no
Javi's
left-handed
27.
Power.
There's a big difference.
I don't
big
know.
Difference.
Why? Why is there a big difference?
Because when Javi is a free agent, he'll be 29 years old. The market will be insane. Rizzo will be 33. And guess what?
Well,
the market won't be insane.
Be 32, and you don't know that if he puts up two more good years.
So I can revisit it in a year. Well, I would be more.
Okay, hold
on.
So revisit Baez in a year. The point is, the closer you get to free agency, the better chance they have of walking. I'm not saying you have to sign him up either. I'm not, but I'm giving you the reasons why you might. You could get him at a good rate, probably 3 more years after the 2 option years, whatever the case may be. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt got signed up at 32 years old, and it wasn't the best year, and that's probably what Theo's thinking. 5 years, $130 million. Goldschmidt didn't have the best year, but he had a good finish. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't, but I think there's some really strong arguments you can make that you should. If you say no, you could say no to any player, to me, with 2 years to go. Let Baez prove it a little bit more before you hand him $150 million. I don't know.
Yeah, all I'm saying, we've got to take a timeout. We can continue this debate. All I'm saying is the problems the Cubs have right now, there's this narrative on social media from Cubs fans, Ricketts is cheap, the Cubs are doing this, he's squandered all his goodwill. No, actually, the fact is he's given Theo insane amounts of money to spend, and they've drafted and developed basically no one, and they have spent their money awfully.
I know, but
hold that thought. We'll come right back.
You got it.
And we will continue this discussion. Also, this news in from Darryl Van Scowen. Bob Rosenberg, the guy you hear in the background, a wild pitch, the longtime official scorer for the White Sox and Cubs home games, will not return next season. It is an MLB decision. How about that?
What does that mean? It's an MLB decision.
I don't know. I just read you the tweet.
Did he insult somebody?
Institution.
Too many mistakes. Probably.
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, it's a 50-50 call on official score, and it seemed that he was on the wrong side of that often. All right.
Fast timeout. Cap at the winter meetings. Cap at company. Sponsored by White Claw. Pure. Hard. Seltzer. Don't forget Dan Weider, 11 o'clock, talking Bears. Be right back.
We're breaking down Bears and Packers. Rob Domofsky of ESPN will join us, plus Barstool Big Cat at 4 o'clock.
Barstool.
We start at 2 on ESPN 1000.
No, I was arguing. No, something else.
Hey, welcome back, ESPN 1000. He's Jesse.
We're trying to remember
what you guys okay back there? What's happening in San Diego? Jesse, are you okay? What are you doing?
We're arguing about what they're about to argue about.
Oh, good. Can't wait. Awesome.
We were arguing about so much. He's like, what was the last thing we were arguing about?
Right. That, before Bob Rosenberg, but after Rizzo. That's what I couldn't remember.
Yeah, when I said everyone wants to blame the owner.
Oh,
and
right.
The fact of the matter is, much as I love Theo and Jed, the blame goes there more than on the owner.
I think I was just going to make the point. It's just we're all so conflicted as observers. Because you and I have talked about this as well. You do the whole Gallagher way rant, right? You've done that. So wait a minute. They're making money. Then again, the money he's used has been misused. Then again, they're making money. You know, it's just back and forth, back and forth. So you're right. Ultimately, it's hard to blame ownership. They really have done a lot and written a check. I said last offseason, it's great to be top 5 in payroll. How about being top 1? Now, maybe I wasn't being fair.
Okay, like, they were number 2,
right,
Jesse.
Right. They, at the end of the day, were. And I get that. Look, we said it last segment. The Astros might be shedding. The Indians are shedding.
The Red Sox.
Red Sox are a big market. They're shedding. The Cubs are shedding. So, and Theo's right. Teams go through cycles. Ultimately, he knows. And this is why he has said this over and over. Tom has given us enough money. We haven't always used it. He has said that. So, Cub fans, I have to see that reality. I mean, Theo does walk on water in some respect because he brought the championship and he did the same in Boston. But some of the decisions haven't been good. And certainly the development hasn't been good. I mean, the stuff we don't see behind the scenes that we hope will work out in terms of the guys who get to the major, that hasn't happened. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, the amazing thing to me is that you look at that team, there's still talent there. Like, everyone's to the point where tear it down, blow it up, the team stinks. There's still talent there.
And that's why if they do nothing, okay, maybe you can make something out of this thing. But Theo has his doubts. Look, Theo loves David Ross, right? But Theo has his doubts that just changing the manager is going to work with this offense. And the other thing is, you still have that clock, that ticking clock, 2 years from now. Schwarber, Baez, Rizzo, Bryant. So either you're just going to let everybody walk or whatever, or you're going to spend a lot to keep them because you're not going to get value if you wait another year.
Okay, Lexi Weaver, who covers the Rangers for The Athletic, just tweeted, sources are indicating, obviously she's talking to the team, that the price on Josh Donaldson has now exceeded the Rangers' comfort level and they are likely out.
It's got to be the Nationals. I'm telling you, it's got to be. There's my prediction. It won't be the Braves. I just can't see the Braves doing. If it's the Braves, they're doing something they don't normally do, making an offer like that. The Rangers have tons of money moving into the new ballpark, so if it's too pricey for them. I was talking to Rizzo last night. I mean, Mike Rizzo. I was with him at the bar. Not that he gave me inside information, but we joked if they go to ownership with Josh Donaldson now, it's going to look like a bargain because you know it was Anthony Rendon a moment ago.
Right.
So from $245 million, he can go down to $100 million. I think the Nats are going to get Donaldson. I really do. And again, this leaves Chris Bryant for the Braves, for the Rangers, for the Dodgers, for the Phillies. Now I think that
I do not think the Phillies have any interest in Chris.
I think. Well, I'm just saying open. You know, they have third base open. I agree with you. I think it's. I think it's the Braves or the Dodgers. Now I heard a little something this morning that maybe the Braves aren't going to give up all these guys that I've been talking about these last few days.
Max Fried and all.
Max Fried and all the and the couple. So maybe it's the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers like to do things in a cost controlled way. 2 years of Bryant, try to get over that World Series hump. And they do have the prospects. So if a Bryant trade gets done, I think it's the Dodgers or Braves, with this caveat. The Rangers and Cubs have hooked up often on deals. Often. And if I haven't studied the Rangers farm system. If there's enough there, maybe it is. Except that the Rangers would have to trade and then sign them. The Rangers just don't want 2 years. They're coming out of a sort of retooling. I don't think they'd want to give up prospects for 2 years. So I would see a trade and sign there, or at least maybe a sign eventually.
Yeah, Texas has dealt with Boris before. Last thing, and we'll let you go. I know you got a flight to catch. They gave last year's team a shot when the year before, Theo said the offense is broken and did zero to fix it.
Right.
Zero.
Right.
Daniel Descalso, that was their idea of fixing it.
Right.
And we know how bad that's been.
And while getting rid of their best pinch hitter. Go ahead.
Correct. Your guy.
Yeah. Are you now is probably looking, probably calling his agent.
Are you going up to Anaheim before you fly home?
I've got to maybe sue them a little bit. His position just got taken over by a guy making $240 million. Pretty much the best hitter around.
Okay, we're talking about Tommy Lestell there. But they said, and again, this was on ownership. Yeah. Okay, you need extra how many millions for Castellanos? Done. How much do you need for Kimbrel? Yeah, we got some back on Zobrist. I'll green light a $43 million contract.
Right.
Good. Let's go. And in the end, the offense still looks broken.
Right.
So if they don't fix what ails this team and basically start, I'm not saying tear it apart, but it needs to be overhauled.
That's why.
It's not a detailed job at the wax shop. Let's wax the car. Let's get in the transmission and check out and see what's going on here. Then it's on Theo, Jed, and his team, not on the owner.
Yeah, and there's
I'm
only
just telling you.
To me, there's only two ways to do it. One is sort of out of desperation. If you can't make a trade, you bring in the best center field leadoff man you can find and cross your fingers that that changes the whole lineup, kind of like Fowler did, I guess. The other option is the reason Chris Bryant is on the market is he checks off all these boxes. You can't change the dynamic of that offense without making a big trade. You really can't. And Chris Bryant is the one that gets you the most value. And then you can start with, you know, Nico Horner gets more time. You bring back a third baseman that has a different, you know, maybe skill set, not better than Bryant, but just different. And then you start revamping things. Otherwise, it's the same guys, like you said. And then you're just hoping that David Ross, it can be the difference. So they're in a pickle, man. They're in a pickle unless they really get value. And it's just starting to feel like they're not. But, you know, it's a process, negotiations, all that stuff. Let's see how it plays out before we get overly critical, because you know we will do that if it doesn't
work out. Jesse's telling us he's got a flight. You're on a private plane.
I wish. I'm going to the Rule 5 draft, the least sexy thing in the world right now.
Johan Santana was a Rule 5 pick at one
point.
Well,
we were going over it last night with Alex Anthopoulos, the Atlanta Braves. He's like, because we asked him, who are you going to pick in the Rule 5? And he goes, on Friday, I'll be asking my own guys, who did we pick in the Rule 5? But there won't be many. Here's the thing. When you pick someone in the Rule 5,
they have to stay on your roster the entire year.
So people don't think there's going to be many taken because there's so many contending teams. You don't take some prospect and put him on your major league team if you're trying to contend. The sad thing is the Cubs are likely to take somebody. It's sort of an indication most of the time that you're not a contending team. The Cubs took Hector Rondon, I think right before 15, and he was a big part of it, maybe 14, and then he became a big part of it. So it's kind of an indication whether you're a contender or not a lot of the time.
And I remember when they took Rodney Myers from Kansas City.
Some of them don't work
back
out
in the
as
day,
much.
And they had to keep them all year.
Yeah.
Hey, man, travel safe.
Great seeing you guys.
You too. You're
love
the
it
best.
When you're on site. Danny, you owe me for something. I don't know what. But I
by the way, just so you know, they have a coffee shop down there. They don't have to deliver coffee here. Lady comes up, delivers Jesse's coffee. The freaking coffee shop's right down there.
Every day this week, she's room service has brought one cup of coffee to this table.
The delivery fee is $6. The coffee is $4. So I'm paying more for the delivery.
$10, you can get a $2 cup of coffee right down the escalator.
Did Frank Sinatra go get his own coffee? I don't think so. I mean, I am busy here. I'm busy.
He's wearing sunglasses. He's drinking $10 coffee.
Beers with Mike Rizzo. It's a beautiful life.
All right. We will take a timeout, and we're going to talk to Dan Wiederer. Bears, Packers. That's what we'll preview for you next.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the scenes of the winter meetings with Cap and Company. Brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer.